where did this man get all these things? And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, only in his hometown and in his own house is a prophet without honor. And he did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. Well, that's one thing, but I want you to turn to Mark's Gospel, chapter 6. Mark's Gospel, chapter 6. Beginning at the very first verse. Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. And when the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue. And many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things? They asked. What's this wisdom that has been given him? That he even does miracles. Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't he Mary's son and his brother, James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, only in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his own house is a prophet without honor. And then Mark says something more than Matthew says. It doesn't contradict Matthew. It simply adds to it. It says, he could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. I want you to just pause for a minute. I don't know if you have it, but I have the NIV Study Bible. I generally like the NIV Study Bible. I think it has some good stuff for helping you get a handle on the Word of God. But any study Bible is not the Word of God. I remember when I first started with my Scofield, some people would quote the Scofield notes as though they were the Word of God. But it says right here in the Bible, and they'd quote the Scofield notes. Here's what the NIV Study Bible says. Verse 5. He could not do any miracles there. And this is what it says about that statement. It is not that Jesus did not have the power to perform miracles at Nazareth, but that he chose not to. In such a climate of unbelief. Well, if that's really what it said, then why didn't it say, so he chose not to? Yeah, that's their explanation in the note. No, it can't mean that! God forbid that we not that God does not have the power in and of himself, but that God, because of his nature, because of his character, has limited his power in divine ways and tied it to us. We often say, why isn't God moving? See, the bane of true waiting is doubt, is a lack of faith. Not intellectual lack of faith, not a thing that God couldn't theoretically move, But that's not faith. If that's faith, then the devil's in. Because the devil knows exactly what God can and cannot do. He knows more theory than you'll ever glimpse in this life of what God has the power to do. If that's faith, then Satan has more faith than all of us, and he must be in better shape. I'm talking about the faith that I believe that God is and will do what he has said he will do. And when God has us waiting, unbelief, doubt, lack of faith assaults our ability to wait. We reach the point where we no longer expect God to work. Well, I guess God has just chosen not to. I want you to notice two things about what Mark tells us in addition to what Matthew says. The first is that their unbelief was not universal in stopping everything that Jesus could do, because it says he could not do any miracles there except. There were some people that, in spite of the general lack of faith in the community, won through and received what they needed. They didn't give in to the majority report. They said, I don't care if no one else believes it, I'm going for it. That ought to encourage us. That ought to be saying, because you know, we very often fall into this thing where we kind of say, well, you know, it's not my fault, it's the rest of those guys. If they just... I don't know who those sick people was. The Bible doesn't tell us. But they were not limited because everybody else said no. Jesus still showed he was the Messiah. He did what was promised would be done because of their faith. But here's the second thing. If we want God to move in any real way, we have to be increasing the faith of others. We have to be calling others to believe with us. I don't know what happened. I may be reading in, but it seems to me pretty clear that those few people that got healed didn't do a great job of convincing their neighbors of what Jesus did for them. Because Jesus left the town in as much unbelief as he entered. And sometimes we're willing to take what God does in our life or through our life or in our little circle, and we just kind of say, well, I've got mine, and as long as I hold on to it, I'm okay. I have to wonder what would have happened if it says a few. Well, I don't know how many a few is, but it's more than one, isn't it? Isn't it? If those few people would have come together and said, look at what this man did right here, could maybe Nazareth have been saved? It's speculation, I don't know. But I do know that God has triumphed over unbelief a lot of times. It's never been a quick victory. It didn't happen in a minute. And it was a hard victory. You know, there are some people that triumphed over unbelief, but their stories are long ones, aren't they? The Calebs and the Joshuas. And they had a long time to turn back and give in. But the wonderful news is, they made it to the end. I want to challenge us today about our unbelief. I want to beat you over the head, but I want to challenge you. What possible good does unbelief do? Well, there is one good thing that unbelief does. It protects me from disappointment. You know, you don't do anything that doesn't provide some good for you, do you? If it doesn't give you some benefit, you don't do it, do you? The benefit of unbelief, the only one is, protects me from disappointment. But you know how it does it? It starts me in disappointment, and I think I can't go any lower. It's not going to happen. So I simply accept disappointment and call myself a realist. Every single realist is going to be in hell. Do you know that? Because realistically speaking, there is no way that you or I can get into heaven. We don't have a realistic chance of a snowball. Do we? So the only person in heaven is the person who reaches beyond realism. And everything in this world, you can't get something for nothing. That's a maxim, isn't it? It says there is a God who gives something for nothing. And he can save even someone like me. And not just he can, but he will. I saying that makes it easy. I can just muster a minute of faith, that'll be it. Not for a second. I'm not saying that for a second. But I'm saying that waiting very quickly degenerates into unbelief and apathy. And if you're feeling apathy, I've heard a lot of people, they may not have used that word, but you know, I feel like this. You know what causes feeling like this spiritually? Unbelief. Because if I really believe that God is at work, whether I see him or not, that his plan is going forward, whether I see it or not. No matter what he has me doing, there's no room for apathy, is there? Because today could be the day. I remember when I first got saved, people had that expectation about the return of Christ. People would talk to one another, and those of you who are around in active evangelical, Bible-believing, whatever you want to call it, churches in the 70s, man, people would just walk up to people. Jesus could be coming today. Today could be the day. People would look at their watches. I wonder how it fits today. And that's true. But here's the other thing, and it's just as true. Today could be the day that all the pieces fall into place. God's ready to move. Isn't that true? That situation in your family that has found no resolution week after week, month after month, year after year, today could be the day. That prodigal, and you know, as we look around here, there's a lot of prodigals that need to come home. Not just a little of the way home, all the way home. And you know, there's some prodigals that stayed home, because who was the greater prodigal son? We call that the parable of the prodigal son. Is that the parable of the prodigal son? It's the parable of the two prodigal sons. And the one prodigal son stayed right under the father's nose the whole time. But who was the greater prodigal? Yeah. Today could be the day that those prodigals come home. I'm talking about waiting in belief in a God who is able and who is willing and who is working. Now, there's a lot more that I want to say about this, and we don't have time today because I do want to close for just a couple of minutes. One of the things I've noticed for a long time, there are two things that happen when we ask for prayer requests. Been in every church I've ever been part of, and it doesn't seem to go away. It gets a little better for a period of time if the Spirit's really moving, but it always settles back to it. There's two things I noticed. The first is that whenever we ask for prayer, most of the time people ask for physical things. So-and-so's sick, so-and-so's house burned down, so-and-so's this, so-and-so's that. As though the most important works that God ever does is you know, getting a person to the right doctor so that the doctor can heal them. The second thing is that almost every time that people are given an opportunity to make requests for prayer, it's for someone else. Well, I have a friend that got a dog from the same litter as someone who's cat is up a tree, or, you know. It's somebody out there. And I know it's a lot more uncomfortable to ask for ourselves than it is for someone else. But I want us to close today by having a time. We're not going to take any longer than it has to. We're not going to stand around here and sing 97 verses of some hymn until somebody does it. But I want to give people here an opportunity to ask if they would pray. It can be anything. I'm not going to limit God, but specifically for the need of their heart. That's different than the need of my life. My life need may be that, you know, I get a new job because I don't have a job, or I do this or I do that. But getting that doesn't solve the need of my heart, does it? And I want to invite anyone who has the courage, because there's a lot of people who have been saying, you know, I just really feel